Blog Talk Radio.
The Healing Circle is a panel composed of spiritual teacher Kat Edwards and myself, David Clark, a former social worker. We come together every week for topical discussions in which we share our experience, strength, and hope about everyday life. From depression to connection, we cover all the issues you feel and see as you walk life's sacred journey. Listeners are encouraged to call in and contribute to the show because we all have hard-earned wisdom we need to share. Join us every week at the same day and time. And for today's show, we're going to be talking about the topic, finding your way to self-love and freedom. So please feel free to participate or to just listen. Now let me introduce Kat Edwards. Kat, how are you tonight?
I'm wonderful, thank you. How are you going?
I'm doing well, too. It's been a beautiful weekend, maybe not weather-wise. We're definitely headed towards winter. There was some snow in the sky today, but it's to be expected. Our Thanksgiving comes this week, and I can remember one snowy Thanksgiving where we actually had it out at the family camp, which is not, it's not weatherproofed. There's a wood stove there that will heat the cabin about 10 degrees above the outside temperature. But there was snow on the ground that year, and we couldn't drive our cars down to the camp, so we had to portage the food down the steep hill to get to the camp. And the turkey went sliding down the hill like a toboggan. Yeah. So, anyhow, that's just a little anecdote. And to me, those kinds of episodes in our life exemplify what freedom is all about, especially when you find the humor in a situation that some people might find frustrating or maddening. It was just a joy to watch that turkey going, and we just hoped it wouldn't end up in the lake. So,
what did you end up eating?
We ate the turkey.
No, you did.
Yeah, it slid on the snow. We just washed it off and threw it in the oven. Yeah. No, it didn't get away from us. We found it.
Oh, good then.
Yeah. So, at any rate, speaking for myself, I was going to talk about my own experience related to self-love and freedom, and I know that, you know, both of us usually do some research. I suspect you have, even though we didn't talk before the show. Is there anything in particular you'd like to say about self-love before I share?
It's a journey, isn't it, self-love?
Oh, yes.
I think we're naturally born with self-love. Of course, when we're tiny, we're out of necessity, driven by ego. That's a biological thing. You can't not do that. And really, ego bashing out there, and ego is a survival mechanism. So I don't see it as a negative. I see if it's out of control, it is, but I don't see it as a negative. But at some point, you've got to move out of that and into your heart towards yourself. And then what tends to happen for people is they go into survival a lot. And there's all sorts of different reasons why they're in a survival mode. They may be successful in other areas of their life, but they're still in survival mode. At some point, they've got to become self-aware enough to realize that they're their own biggest critic. And when they start to become self-aware of the way that they speak to themselves, then they can stop speaking to themselves like that. At that point, they've just made their first big self-loving act. So, to me, self-love is not necessarily getting a haircut, though that, you know, that's part of it. But these are external things, looking after the body. It's deeper than that. It's remembering to speak to yourself as you would someone you love dearly. It's considering yourself. It's thinking about how you treat yourself and how you allow others to treat you. So boundaries, you know, and boundaries for yourself too. I was talking to a friend the other day who does not allow certain foods into her house, not because she's against them, but because if they're there, she'll eat them and she doesn't want to. And I exactly have the same boundaries with different foodstuffs, but it's the same thing. I've set boundaries for myself because I know if I start eating something that I find very yummy, I'm going to also find that my hips grow bigger. So I'm going to make sure I don't have that as a self-boundary thing. And, you know, I'm going to be thinking about what I put on my plate because I need to earn the things that I enjoy, the chocolate or whatever, by eating the things that my body really needs. And that is a self-love act. So none of that really comes to pass until you start to remember to talk to yourself with love. We talk to children with love, if we're a nice person, we do. We'll find, you know, somebody that we want to, that we want their approval. We'll talk to them with love. We'll mind our conversation around polite company, but do we mind our thoughts? And even in extreme circumstances, when things are really rough, we have to ensure that we mind our thoughts so that we try and stay in that state of self-love, because it's there that things turn around for the better. It's there that little opportunities come. What do you think, David?
Well, I agree with that, and I really liked what you were saying about self-love being a journey. I think anything in life is a journey, and it can be a delicious journey. And I'm going to just segue to what you were saying about setting personal boundaries about food, yummy food. I'm sitting here with a tube of Fig Newtons, which I love, and I've eaten half the tube. At any rate, I believe that we do need to come out of that ego place and go to our heart, as you were saying. And it is a real trip to get there. For me, it was a very challenging trip. And I recognized that I didn't like myself very well. And I was looking at external things and how they impacted on me instead of going inside. I didn't know how to do that. And over the years, I slowly began to put the pieces together. And to me, what I needed to do was take a good hard look at myself, a compassionate, objective look at myself, all the different facets of myself, looking at those negative and positive qualities, because we all have them both, and they're polar opposites. We tend toward one side of the scale or the other. I mean, just as an example, I have been arrogant at points in my life, and today I'm basically a very humble man. And I had to be able to recognize that I had that negative trait and be willing to work on it. And there's so many different ways that you can do that. For me, it was just a matter of going through an exercise of getting honest with myself and turning it over, recognizing that I did have that potential for humility. And I took steps to lead a less judgmental life, life where I wasn't the center of the universe, a life where I recognized my connectedness to all that is, all people, all of nature, all of creation, however that manifests. I'm just a tiny, tiny little cog in the wheel, as we all are. And so, you know, I did an inventory. I've done it a few times, an inventory of my negative and positive qualities, assets, liabilities. And today I'm glad to say that after a lot of work on myself, that I've realized most of those positive qualities, and the ones that are not so positive, I'm still working on to overcome them. And as I have done that, I have found the pathway to freedom, because I've let go of self-judgment. I've let go of condemnation, which I did to myself. And you know, as many of you know, I'm a gay man, and so much of that was connected to how I judged gay people. I didn't think it was the right way to be. I didn't recognize that it was an essential part of who I was. And so I really did a disservice to myself in judging myself harshly and looking at myself as flawed, evil, if you will. I mean, that's a strong word, but you get the idea. That, to me, is freedom. That's just one small example. So I'll return to talking a little bit more about that, but I want to go back to Kat and see what reflections she has.
You know, I was just absorbing all of that, everything that you were just saying there, and that journey that you had. And really, you were on a journey of releasing toxic thinking from external as well as internal sources. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I remember, would have been about 2011, maybe, 2010. Yeah, about a decade ago. A lot of things that had been hidden from me were coming to pass or coming to the light. A lot of answers that I had been seeking about really destructive things that were going on in my life were beginning to be revealed. And so before then, I was coping with a barrage of pain that was coming at me that I was not creating. I was the person responsible for dealing with it and putting out the fires, but I was not the person who was creating the situation. However, I made a decision prior to that, 13 years prior to that, which set me up unknowingly to be in the position I was in 2010. And so when all the truth came to light, I began a whole broken record of constant regrets. I couldn't stop it. In fact, it became so loud that I started to be afraid of being alone, because I would be with my own mind, and it felt like my own mind was attacking me. It was just a constant stream of regrets that were just smashing me, things that I could not do anything about. And I saw a psychologist, as anyone would, and I didn't get anywhere with her. She couldn't assist me with this, which was quite difficult to deal with. And I had to find my own way through. And maybe she was incompetent, I don't know. But that was the case. And if anyone's listening and they had a better experience with a healthcare professional, mental health care professional, I'd love to hear from you. But that was my experience. what I decided to do was take control because I was feeling out of control. And my partner at the time was going away for work a lot, and I was finding myself alone in the house a lot. So I started to write down everything that was running through my head, and I got it out of my head, and that was the first part of taking control. Then I started writing down all the things that I had been doing that had been working for me, everything that was positive that had been working for me in my life, and all my achievements, big or small. And I I'd been through some pretty rattling experiences coming up to this period of time, so I was able to pat myself on the back for living through those things and learning from them as well. So I did that, and the regrets began to become quieter because any time that they started to yell at me, I would then counter them by saying, well, cancel that. I succeeded by doing this. I succeeded by doing that. I achieved this. I achieved that. And eventually, I got to a point where the regrets were no longer an attack, but rather just a kind of reflection of sadness that cannot ever be removed from my life, but I've learned from, if that makes sense. And so this whole process was a self-loving act. There is no other way to put it, I guess, you know, because if I didn't love myself, I would have continued to victimize myself. But I had something to live for. I had a family. And I knew that if I continued down that path of allowing these regrets to attack me, I was going to take myself away. And that was not a positive thing to do for my family. So I made sure that I created a buffer between myself and that action by taking control. And because I took control, I started to find a kind of freedom that I hadn't had before then because of all the stuff that it was going on before then and being in that survival mechanism coping. So as I said at the beginning of the show, ego is your survival, and at that time it wasn't survival mode, oh look at me, I'm a flashy person, I'm so good, I'm going to take control of the room. No, ego isn't always working like that. It's not all self-serving, take. Sometimes your ego is trying to help you put one foot in front of the other and keep your head up from drowning. And it's simply saying to you, now we do this and we stay alive. Now we do this and we stay alive. Now we do this and we stay alive. It's a completely different situation to the one that the media broadcasts as being egotistical. There's a lot of people out there in survival mode. And they're not going around telling everybody that they want to be a taker. So, you know, you've got to love that part of yourself too. If you've ever been in the kind of situation that's made you have to survive, and especially as a caregiver, have to survive, you've got to turn around and thank that part of who you are, and that's a self-loving act as well. So when I got through all of that and I started to come out the other end, that's one of the things that I did, was I reflected on the fact that, shit, I could survive all of that. I did survive all of that, and I love and thank that part of myself for helping me through. I made mistakes through it all. I'm not perfect, but I managed to get through it and remain somebody who could sleep at night and remain somebody who could be a part of the community and have relationships and be liked. And that was really important, you know. So if I hadn't done all of these self-loving things, anyone who spoke to me would have listened to a broken record of regrets, a person stop talking about the past and would have listened to a lot of toxicity. And so that then I would have experienced people distancing from me, and I did not experience that. So to me, that was opening the door to inner freedom. Does that make sense, David?
Yes.
By making those choices.
It does make sense. And so much of what you talked about makes sense to me. I relate to. I was thinking about your discussion on regrets, and I carried a lot of those, and so many of those were connected to parts of myself that I judged, and I felt like I had wasted a lot of time. I'm trying to think of how to put it. I guess the point is that there's nothing that has a negative quality to it that serves me. I want to live in the light. I recognize that I am both light and dark, as we all are. But it's a matter of shifting. In order for me to find my way to freedom, I have to shift gears. I have to coast through whatever troubles me, whatever takes me down. I do have the freedom to work my way through the turbulence of life, the turbulence of the undertow of the water. I'm losing the thread here. At any rate, it is such a joy to be able to find myself liking myself today, and that was a starting point. I actually love myself, and it wasn't until I could get honest with myself that I was able to see that I was beloved just as I am. I mean, I'm not perfect. None of us are. I used to demand perfection from myself. I used to demand perfection in everything that I did. And that's just a setup for failure. And failure is what came to me. And I judge that too. The thing about failure is it is the greatest opportunity for growth and learning, and instead I used it as a weapon against myself. Today, when I fail at something, I can't say that I embrace it. There's some that say that that's what you should do, but I realize that I'm just going through some growing pains, that I have some fine-tuning to do, and all of that takes me back to that place of freedom again. I'm trying to think of some examples. I will think about that some more. Offhand, nothing's coming to mind. But, you know, I think that joy and freedom is our birthright. I believe that's all the universe wants for any of us. And certainly love comes along with that. And I think for most people, it is a real journey to get to the point where they can love themselves. There's so many obstacles that happen along the way that can threaten our feelings of self-love. And God knows I fell into many of those traps. And today I know I don't have to do that. Today I can say it's okay. If something happens that doesn't please me, I don't need to pretend it's my fault, because at some level I used to think that I was at fault for things. It's true, we live in a vibrational universe and we do create our own realities, but there's that humanness aspect that comes in that can sometimes, when we judge it, trip us up. So I choose not to look at those things anymore as being troublesome. I look at them as learning experiences. What do you think about that, Kat? I know I was going around and around the mulberry bush, but I was trying to paint a picture.
Yeah, I agree. So you're talking about having a relationship with yourself. Is that right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, and so the relationship that you have with yourself sets you up for the relationship that you'll have with other people. And we've discussed this in the past, having toxic relationships, friendships, relationships with co-workers, family, friends, that sort of deal. And in the end, we teach other people how to treat us. And if you're not treating yourself with self-love, if you're forgetting that, then you're giving somebody else an invitation to treat you without love as well. And there's plenty of people that enjoy doing that to others, unfortunately, and they do that for their own reasons, but often it's because they've learned not to love themselves either, and by hurting someone else, they, in a misguided way, feel better. And because as we've also discussed in the past, everybody, no matter how guided or misguided their thinking is, are seeking to feel better. Even you know, Jeffrey Dahmer was seeking to feel better. So you're going to have a better life in general if you choose to love yourself and to stand up to people who don't treat you well and say, I do not wish to be treated that way anymore. You must give yourself permission to be loved, and you must permit yourself to love yourself. One of the exercises I do with clients is to remember a photograph of themselves as a small child. And in that photograph, that child to you is either your physical birthed child or a niece or nephew, depending on whether or not you're a parent as an adult. And so there is that separation between adult and child when you view the photograph of yourself as a child, say, like a 6-7-year-old child, you know, still very innocent, but has some knowledge of themselves and of the world. How would you speak to that child? How would you encourage a child? Would you celebrate their little wins? How would you help that child get dressed and brush their hair? How would you read to that child? How would you discipline that child? How would you think about that child when you want to create an outing or an adventure? How would you go when you're shopping and you see something that you know that child would like? Would you think, that child would love that. Oh, I'll buy that for that child. Or, I'll save up so I can buy that for that child. Or, I think that the child would really love this thing. And I think the child would really love this adventure or this experience. And so I'm going to create that and make that happen. Do you see that all of a sudden you're looking at your own inner self, that child within you, and let's face it, we all are, the vulnerable humanity within us is an inner child. That is our humanity. And when we say that someone's lost their humanity, they've lost their grip on who they truly are, and who they truly are is a joyful little child. You can be as educated to the hilt, professional, beige personality on the outside, but somewhere deep in within, you're a little kid that liked to play in the mud. And so, you know, we've got to look at ourselves and remember that part of who we are and nurture and love it and think on ourselves that way. Because that going through dealing with situations that cause us to have to survive is the child in us, which is the ego. I'm talking the infant ego. You know, that's the one who damn well got to deal with it. And the instinct, that part of you that is an animal in on this planet, as all creatures are, the instinct has to deal with it. And that, you know, we could go into the medical science behind that kind of chronic stress. But it stuffs you up, stuffs your body up, stuffs your brain up if you're like that all the time. There's only one way out, and that's peaceful thinking. And you've got to make yourself do that. But by doing it, you're going to have far more freedom. And, you know, David, I sometimes think about this topic and then I reflect on people who've been in concentration camps, like the soldiers in Burma. That's a, no, or somebody who's being held captive by a psychopath or something. How do you deal with that and still have self-love? In your practice as a social worker, you will have come across people who'd had some pretty horrendous experiences. Did you ever come across somebody who had gotten through that by thinking self-loving thoughts? Because our emotions are deeply linked with the way that we think, and if we think harshly about ourselves and stay in fear, our emotions are actually going to make our experience worse. So have you ever found that either with yourself in any extreme experiences or with any of your clients, that they chose positive thinking to get through a really difficult circumstance?
I can think of one that comes to mind. Now, mind you, most of the clients that I dealt with were mentally ill, and they were the lost souls of the system who had resisted treatment and were in such a bad way that they couldn't take care of themselves, let alone love themselves. I did have other aspects. I did have other populations that I dealt with later on, and there's one man that comes to mind. He had brain cancer, and he was about my age at the time. That would have been somewhere in his 40s. And that man had such a strong faith, and it translated into faith in himself, love of God, love of self. I mean, he really inspired me. He gave me a plaque, and I'm trying to remember what it said, but the message had to do with basically that you're all right today. I can't remember it at all. I wish I knew it, but he eventually died from brain cancer, but he was such a positive, upbeat person. And I think that the fact that he loved himself as he was, in spite of the pain that he was going through, he loved himself, he loved life, and that was his way to freedom from the things that were not so pleasant in his life. And he never complained, ever. You know, I was thinking a lot about some of the things you were saying about the child within us all. Because we all have it at each step of the way. There is a child not just in the infant stage. We have our young child. We have our preteen child. We have our teenage child. They all live within us. And a lot of times those children are damaged for whatever reason. You know, a lot of that can come from abuse, neglect, or dysfunctional families. where the child is not being properly validated, the child is not unconditionally loved, the child feels the need to try to earn affection through external things like performance in school. The child may be very sad and may run from that sadness by doing whatever it takes to make it go away, which only works for a little while. For me, the way I dealt with that when I got to be older was addiction. And I would stuff down those uncomfortable feelings through acting out in various ways, including drugs and alcohol. And that was only toxic to myself. The other thing that I like that you were talking about, Kat, and I don't know if this was earlier in your most recent passage, but I liked what you said about honoring yourself and letting go of things that don't and people that don't serve you. Life is short, and we're not going to find our way to freedom if we allow ourselves to be bogged down, chained by people that would seek to be discourteous, mean, abusive to us, toxic, however you want to look at it. It's all toxic. So those were some good things, and I thank you for sharing those things. And I love that exercise with the picture. I've done that myself.
Yes.
Yeah.
I just, as we were talking earlier, and I said to you, you know, what about people who've been in extreme situations? How do they get through? And then I remembered a documentary that I'd seen, and from the perspective of the second person involved. And it was about two guys who, and it happened in real life, were captured as prisoners of war in the Vietnam War. And one guy really supported the other guy through. And they were put in cages. And I think they had to lay down from memory. They had, so it was like a coffin-type cage that both of these men were in. And they were starved, you know, weren't given water and tortured. And then they were moved into a building and put in cages in a building. And in that building, the two of them were able to start to talk. And the more positive guy helped the other guy get through and helped him keep his mental health high enough that he could survive this ordeal, and assisted him in not succumbing to his emotions in a way that would torture himself. And that person was the late John McCain.
Oh.
I think he was a former presidential nominee.
Yes.
Senator John McCain. I don't know much about him as a politician, and I'm certainly not going to go into politics. But in this documentary, as a young man, far long before he became a politician, he helped that other guy survive that incredibly difficult situation, and it would be worth looking him up and seeing if you can find any documentaries about that, because that's a terribly extreme, awful, traumatizing experience. And to be strong enough to get yourself through, and I suspect that by having that other person there to G up to say, it's okay, we're going to get through it, that was actually helping him himself, John McCain himself, to get through it. So the leader and the follower there were helping each other, absolutely. I can't remember what rank John McCain had versus the other guy, and I really don't think it mattered. It was two human beings dealing with an awful situation and helping each other through. I'm also not aware of how John McCain dealt with it when he got out himself. But I do know that the other guy, that when he got out, he will always be in gratitude towards him, and I believe that they were lifelong friends. So, you know, it's times like that where you can really find resilience. And if John McCain could get through a really, really horrible experience, whatever you're going through, you know, it's people like that. There's other people who've been through something extreme who you can take inspiration from, and that may be a way to help you through no matter what's going on in your life. Another thing that I used to do, I went through a very difficult period 5 years ago, and I used to go to the gym, get on the treadmill, and listen to motivational speakers on my earphones. And I would just listen to one motivational speaker after another, after another, after another, because all they were talking about was thinking positively. And I'd move my body. Even if I felt like crap, and I was going through extreme sleep deprivation with babies at the time, and one who had a lot of medical problems, so there wasn't very much sleep at all. So to make myself move my body was sometimes very hard, but for the sake of keeping my mental health buoyant, I had to do it. I'd get on the treadmill and I'd listen to motivational speakers, and it honestly got me through a period of time that I could have gone south fast, just simply from the pure medical science behind chronic sleep deprivation. Anyone, it's a torture, you know, people will torture other people with sleep deprivation. So obviously my baby wasn't meaning to do that to me, but there are real medical problems that you can incur from it, and it has taken me a long time to overcome a lot of them. But if I had not gone through that deliberate act, that self-loving act of moving my body and listening to positive thinking, pumped into my head through other people's power of using their voice, I don't think I would have got through that, and I would have succumbed to far more problems, physical and mental problems. So, you know, when we look at self-love and freedom, I think, David, we've got to look at tools as well as the outcome, because the outcome is, well, I think we're both in a position where we can at least rest for a bit and look back and say, wow, thank God that's over, what a ride. Do
right.
you agree?
Right, absolutely. Yeah, you got that right. Mm.
For me, it's been 20 years. 20, 24, 25 years of holy shit, what a ride. But I can say I walked into my adult life absolutely unequipped for it, and with a whole lot of trauma, hurts, and hang-ups from my childhood and teenage years. So, you know, if you were to argue it, you would say, well, it's probably the whole lot. But certainly they led that, everything that happened as a kid that didn't help me, then led me to choosing the wrong partner, which then led me to having a horrible adult life for a long time. So there's only one way through it, though. You've got to learn who you are, and you've got to put the effort in to love yourself so that you come into habitual, peaceful thought.
Well,
what do you think?
I think that is spot on. I would like to go to the phone lines. We have Eleanor with us tonight.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. Let's see how she's doing. Hi, Eleanor. How are you?
I'm listening to the beautiful talk and enjoying it and identifying with it.
Ah, what points have you identified with?
Well, the movement points really got me because I asked a lady that works here if I could get a treadmill. And she said yes. And I want to believe her because I really need a treadmill. And the child part, if I could give every child my life, 0 to 5, it would be a great gift because it was wonderful.
Mm.
My father would never do anything to hurt me. He wasn't such a great husband, but he was a wonderful father. And he had hope at the time of his death. He changed his manner. And not giving up is something that I've had to think of for a very long time because I was mentally ill for many, many years. And I don't think of a day that I didn't, that I gave up. And now I haven't had a breakdown for at least 15 years. So I don't know what I'm going to do with the rest of my life. I have fear about that. Fear of that I might not work again. What I need is a house. Things to make that house a home. And a way to enjoy my work experience. All I want to do is play a mother or a grandmother or have a cameo on stage. And have a better relationship with food. I'm not as afraid of people as I used to be. People being discriminatory toward gay people. I think that's it.
Well, thank you, Eleanor. I really appreciate your sharing. And it sounds like you've had some remarkable success in your life coming mental illness, and I know what a burden that can be. So kudos to you, because I think that for many of us that suffer that affliction, incumbent on us to do whatever we can do with our outer and interior lives to maintain a tranquil disposition, a tranquil state of mind. And there are a lot of things that can disturb us if we allow that. We don't need to allow our minds flustered or bothered or what have you. Thank you for sharing. Pat, just about time to move into meditation. Is it my turn?
Yes, so.
Is there anything you'd like to say before we do that?
I'm just saying to the listeners, if you're going through a difficult time, make it easier on yourself by starting the practice of thinking positively towards yourself. Try writing a list, a couple of lists, firstly, get it out of your system, all the things that you're saying to yourself that are negative, all the words that are beating you up. Don't do it at night before you go to bed. Get up in the morning, make a cup of coffee, and write them out, but think in a way that you're like a third person. So you're not emotionally involved with the words. They're just words. And you want to write them out to get them out of your head and down onto a piece of paper. It disempowers them. So get them out. Then go back and start writing down everything that you've achieved, everything that you've done well, and everything that you've learned. All positive. And this time, be emotionally invested in them. Start to feel proud of yourself about them. And then sit back and think about whatever situation it is that you're in objectively, as if you're the third person and you've been given, you know, like an engineer looks at a project. You've been given a project. Now, this situation might be something really tough, like the death of a loved one. So I'm certainly not going to try and belittle whatever you're going through. But if you do look at it like a project about how you can break it down and chunk it down into small goals of achievement, it may be the death of an elderly parent. You've got to get through all of the funeral, and then you may be the executor of the will. So then you've got to get through all of that. If you break it down into little goals, then you can achieve all these little goals and then say, well, at the end of that, I'm going to give myself 2 weeks of grieving where I just don't do anything else but that, and I'm actually going to not even go to work if I can. And then at the end of 2 weeks, in the maybe the 12th day, I'm going to start to bring myself into a place where I have to think about this will and make appointments and look at who can assist and who's on my side, and start to look at it as a project so you don't have an emotional overwhelm. Then it becomes appointments in your diary and action steps that you have to do. Then, you know, at the end of all of that, maybe 6 months, then you can set the whole thing down. It's all completed. You've achieved something for the person that you love, and now I can properly grieve. So you give yourself that time and space, and you know, I've done X, Y, Z every day towards this, and I've given myself space to breathe, and then I've got myself through. So you can apply that to any big, horrible thing that you're going through, and all of that is self-loving, all of it. Do not beat yourself up with emotions. Let emotions go through you like a freight train and out the other end. Don't hold them in and don't put them on other people. Give yourself a positive outlet for them, but let them out in a safe towards yourself and towards others manner. And you'll find that you'll get through any horrible situation that life throws at you, and you'll be proud of yourself at the other end. And if you're healing from something, maybe it's a disaster that happened 20 years ago, you can do this. You can. You've got to now look at what's going on in your life today, in this moment, and start to love on yourself right now. Start to look at all the good and focus on the good. And I mean, right down to the basics. In the room that I'm sitting in here right now, there's a box of tissues. That's good. There's an office chair. That's good. I can see my aquarium. That's good. There's some glasses. Glasses are good. And I can start pointing out all the things here that are good. And, in fact, remember that I'm surrounded by goodness at all times. So these things will get you through, and then you get into that positive way of thinking all the time, noticing the goodness of the world all the time, and you have a far keener eye for catching yourself out when you think negatively towards yourself, and also catching out others when they overstep your boundaries.
Thank you, Kat. Some wonderful advice from you. Well, let's take a moment to just go within. I'd ask you to start breathing deeply into the count of four. One, two, three. Hold. Exhale. One, two, three, four. And repeat two more times, breathing in through your nose and exhaling through your mouth. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. In. One, two, three, four. Out. One, two, three, four. And now I want you to imagine yourself as a small child lost in a forest. It's scary. The night is closing in, and you hear sounds that unsettle you, that make you afraid. You cower, and you find shelter in a big tree that has a hole in it. And you listen to the night sounds, and you cringe with fear because you are lost and alone. But daylight comes, and the sounds disappear. And trembling, you get to your feet and you find your way out of the forest. And when you do, you see a big beach, see some rocks up on the cliffs surrounding the ocean. And there's a path that leads onto the rocks, and you take it. You begin to climb. You feel a sense of freedom from what had troubled you the night before. You breathe in deeply of the sea air. Continue to climb. Climb, and you become more confident that you're on solid ground, that you are out and out of harm's way, and you come to a precipice, and you stand there, and you swing your arms wide open. You embrace the rush of the breeze that comes in as you see the surf below you, and you become transformed. You become transformed through the love that you feel for all that is around you, and you recognize that the reason you find it so beautiful is because you love yourself. And so you fling your arms out again, and you step off the precipice as you begin to fly. For now you are a seagull. You are a seagull that is flying high above the beach, and you recognize that through your act of self-love, you have become free. Now, when you're ready, open your eyes, look around you, look at your hands, feel your feet, feel every part of your body, and recognize that it's all part of the love that is created for you, and it is within you that you will always find the love that you so deeply deserve. And with that said, I thank Eleanor for joining us tonight. And Kat, as always, thank you so much for your participation in the show. You're such a wonderful co-host, and I'm honored to host the show with you.
Oh, thank you, David. I agree with that.
I always love doing the show with you as well. And thanks to everybody who tuned in. We appreciate it. And please join us on Facebook at The Healing Circle with David Clark and Kat Edwards. Make sure you click like, and we'd love to hear from you either about your thoughts about the show, any comments that you'd like to make during the show, just type them down in the thread for the show that's advertised on that day and that week. Otherwise, please send us a message with a topic that you'd like to have us discuss. We'd love to hear your suggestions.
Thanks, Kat, and thank you, everybody, for listening tonight. Good night. Good day.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, Eleanor.
Good night, David. Good night, Kat.
Good night, Eleanor.